get ready for a brand new season of Sports Talk. Join Ian Levenstein, Jason Green, Joey Maggs, and all the rest on the Sporting Goods. Mondays from 3 to 4 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. It's all part of the 5-Hour Sports Block on Mondays.
Fellow geek brethren, you have come to the right place for all of your gaming, gadgets, technology, anime, video games, comic books, and anything else you can think of. It is GeekSpeak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, live from Brooklyn, New York, Ian Levenstein.
My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. And of course, we are podcasting at speakgeekspeak.com. This is episode 30 of the Geek Speak podcast, and you would not believe how much of a joy that is to say. Episode 30. Wow, it has been a while. And, well, we have a lot of excellent technology news to talk about on today's show. Everywhere. Basically, we are going all sides of the spectrum today. We are going anime, we are going technology, we are going video games, possibly even a bit of comics. We are doing everything we can possibly get into today's show. And we are starting things off today with probably the most important news that happened this past week. And that, of course, is the big reveal that, well, Apple is going to support Windows. That is right. Apple is going to support Windows. Now, originally they came out saying that, well, that would never happen. Well, they have changed their tune, and there is going to be an officially supported Macintosh application that will allow you to run Windows XP applications inside Macintosh and a whole bunch of other things as well. Also, obviously, pretty much everybody knows that this past week was April 1st, and in doing so, there was a lot of technology scams that went on, and I am going to report on some of those. A lot of the April Fool stunts that went on, a lot of them were sort of fun, I guess that's probably the best way to put it, and well, some of them were a bit messed up. When I look at some of these, I can certainly understand why people fell for them, because, well, they were really well planned out. Sure, they were messed up, and sure, they were a bit see-through at times, but, well, sometimes even when something is odd, it's still hard to pick up on. And, well, that's what April Fool's is all about now, isn't it? Also, some interesting anime news coming out this past week. One of the largest publishers, and it's not something I usually talk about on the show, but I feel I need to touch on this. One of the largest publishers of yaoi properties is going out of business. What is this going to do to the yaoi industry in America? Well, again, I'm not really into that sort of thing too much, but they are good titles from what I have seen, the ones that don't go too far into the idea of yaoi, I guess. But, well, there are fans of it out there. What is this going to do to fans of such things? Well, we'll have to get into that. Also, a fight over the name of Superboy has begun in the world of comic books. And Infinite Crisis just came out this past week. Was one of the things that happened in Infinite Crisis due to this debate over the name of Superboy? There are going to be spoilers involved in that. So those of you who have not read Infinite Crisis number 6, when I do get to that point, I will make sure to let you guys know, because I know it's only been a couple days, but this is one of the biggest stories of the week, and I definitely need to talk about that. And some gaming news. Apparently, gaming makes people fat slobs who like to have sex without condoms. I never thought I'd say those words in the same sentence, but, well, that is what this one website is reporting, and Joystick, then completely ripped it apart, and I am going to have fun talking about this on the show. There might be other stories on the show also. I'm a bit disorganized today because I am exhausted. Thank God I am this close away from spring break. Oh, and also, before I forget it, the Blockbuster lawsuit that Netflix has filed against, well, Blockbuster. Well, that's ironic now, isn't it? But let's start things off with the big news of the week. And this is coming out of BBC News. And this was brought to my attention by multiple sources this week. David Price had it for me. And also, I believe Travis from Massachusetts had it for me. But the first guy to give it to me was Toby Cook. And I'm going to be reading that over from BBC News. Apple makes Macs run Windows XP. Apple has released software that lets users run Microsoft's operating system on its computers that use Intel chips, called Boot Camp. That's an interesting name. The program lets Mac owners run both Apple OS X and Microsoft's Windows XP. A trial version of the software is now available so users can install it. Future versions of Windows OS X software, or OS X, will include the program. The release follows efforts by hackers to get Windows XP booting up on Macs that use Intel chips. Apple said it had no plans to sell or support Windows, but added that many Macintosh owners have said they want to run the operating system on their Intel-using machine. We think Boot Camp makes the Mac even more appealing to Windows users considering making switch, said Philip Schiller, Apple's senior vice president of worldwide product marketing, in a statement. Apple first announced a series of Mac machines that would use Intel chips in June 2005, and the first computers started shipping in January 2006. So I'm not surprised by this news at all because, well, how often do gamers go out there and find some sort of hack and then it's exploited? And then all of a sudden, the gaming companies go out there and say, you know what, maybe this might be a good idea for us. Or similarly, how many times do applications show up on the internet that look really, really appealing? For instance, a podcatcher. A lot of people forget this, now that iTunes is the podcatcher that pretty much everybody uses. But for a while there, it took a lot of work to get yourself podcasts. Unless you were willing to go to a site and download independent episodes of something, which is a major pain in the butt. A lot of people could not do it unless they purchased a podcatcher. I myself use the podcatcher known as Feed Demon on a regular basis, as I mentioned. And, well, back in the day, that's all you had. And then Apple came along and said, you know, it might be a good idea to integrate some podcasting technology into our iTunes. Might be prudent. And the next thing you know, all of a sudden, iTunes was compliant, and you could basically download anything you wanted on iTunes that was a podcast, except for BitTorrent. That, you still got to go to the alternatives for that. So now Macintosh has done it again because, well, they're good at this. Like I said, as soon as the hack hit, Macintosh decided to make their own, which, by the way, tells us they were sitting on this because there is no way that Mac employees just all of a sudden, in a matter of a week, put out a software that would allow you to switch from Windows XP to Macintosh OS X. I mean, come on, that makes no sense at all. This was sitting in a Macintosh lab somewhere, and they were waiting. They were waiting until people could not take waiting any longer and took things into their own hands. Because now you have the official product to work with. You have an official changer that will be integrated into OS X. Without that there, you need to go into the means that was created by the hackers, that was created by NARF to switch Macintosh OS X with Windows XP. And mind you, that entire process did not have a fan driver, from what I heard. So basically, when you would start it up, you were in danger of overheating your system and basically screwing yourself over in the process. Not exactly a smooth move, to say the least. So now you'll have a chance to get it for real. Now, what does this say? Does this say that Macintosh is slowly adapting Windows XP? No, it doesn't. Come on, be serious here. It just means that they want to please their fans. Unlike Microsoft, Apple listens to feedback. And I only say that because, well, if Microsoft listened to feedback, their Internet Explorer browser would be much better now than it ever was. Well, it's still as bad as it always was. Big shock there. It's a major problem. It's a major problem for Windows that they can't seem to understand that people want products. And Macintosh has been doing this for years. Okay? They were the first ones to put out those personal computers that everybody wanted. Then IBM came along, and then from there, Windows started up, and all of a sudden, there was a giant battle. But for a while, Macintosh were the ones to turn to. And once upon a time, Microsoft were making spreadsheets for Macintosh. And I know this from listening in on a very, very good episode of This Week in Tech from this past week, where they celebrated the 30th anniversary of Macintosh. And by the way, anybody who does not listen to This Week in Tech, you should definitely do so over at twit.tv. It is an exceptional podcast. Neil Laporte knows what he's talking about. And he just had some great members of the past of Macintosh on. Back in the days of just plain old Apple I's and Apple II's, these guys were the first employees that Apple ever hired. So they definitely had a lot of great things to talk about. And they talked about how Macintosh and Apple, see, they're almost synonymous now. I keep saying Macintosh, but it's technically Apple. Apple knew how to please the people at home. A lot of other folks felt that the personal computer was not really too personal, that it would only be a business thing, that the whole idea of computers were just too foreign for people at home. Well, guess what? I believe those people have been proven wrong by now. Back in the 80s, they might have thought it, but now, anybody who thinks that, they don't know what they're talking about. In the age of the internet, okay, everybody needs a computer. Macintosh were the first ones to supply people with computers. They still have that heartwarming feel to a lot of folks out there, and that's why so many people stuck with Macintosh over the years. A lot of people did indeed jump shifts, but then there are the people who are loyal. And these are the customers. Customers need to be supported. Macintosh is doing that here. Now, if they were to just go out and say, sure, you guys can try and use Windows, which is basically what they said at first, but I knew it was BS. They said, you can use Windows if you want, but we're not really going to support it at all. And, well, it's all up to you. So if you screw up your operating system because of it, it's not really our fault because we told you you can do whatever you want with your machine, but, well, we're not going to be hanging over you watching it happen. That's originally what they said. That's not what they really meant, though, because Macintosh is smarter than that, as they have proven. So OS X has now gotten even better, and it gives me more of a reason to switch over to an Apple computer sometime in the near future. I still would love to get myself some sort of iBook, at least in the next year or two, because, well, not only would it make the whole podcasting thing easier, being able to use GarageBand on a regular basis, but they're just so damn appealing. And now that I would be able to use my Windows applications on a Macintosh machine, being able to switch from Windows XP to Mac and use it whenever I have to, well, hey, sign me up for boot camp because I think I'm ready to go. It's a great idea by Macintosh, by Apple. And I think that Microsoft better say, yeah, sure, I agree with it too. Because if not, they're really only thinking about the money. And guess what? This is going to give them more money. This is going to get more people buying their OS. And isn't that better for everybody? Well, I certainly hope so. We'll be right back. before I get into the next story, a little bit of a sidetrack over to joystick.com. Apparently, gamers make kids fat, nympho, chain-smoking alcoholics. Heh heh! Apparently, according to NewsScientist.com, the world's number one science and technology news service. Yeah, right. Sure. Exactly. That is exactly what they are. That is complete crap. They have somewhat of a predilection to articles on obesity, and they've reported on a new study purporting that television and video game exposure should be viewed as a major public health issue, and like cigarettes, comparing it to cigarettes, look out, these media should come with a health warning. In fact, such excess childhood exposure can increase obesity, tobacco and alcohol use, risky sexual behaviors, hot coffee, anyone? Violence and social isolation. I'm so alone. Let us analyze all of the article's assertions and findings. These media should come with a health warning. We could have sworn television, film, and video games have done this before, and they have. The data linking violent media to aggression are just as strong as those linking smoking and lung cancer. Are you freaking kidding me? In my experience, I have seen just as many studies refuting the claim as supporting it, and some of those studies supporting the link are a tad questionable. So maybe what the article is actually saying is that there is only a 50% chance cigarettes could kill you. Besides, wouldn't the tobacco industry want its customers to stay alive and smoking? Wow, that is a great advertisement for Thank You for Smoking, which is a movie that I definitely need to see eventually. Toddlers who watch more than 2 hours of television a day are more likely to be overweight at age 3 and 4.5. Translation, the characters you watch on TV are coming out of the screen and shoving delicious sugary treats down your throat. Pay no mind that mom has stocked the pantry with Pop-Tarts and eschewed buying carrots and celery. Could the real link the amount of time said fat kid is not outside playing sports or running around? You know, I think Joystick has a point there. Playing a violent rather than a benign video game makes children more accepting of using drugs or alcohol and having sex without a condom because the researchers suggest it increases general disregard for the safety of yourself and others. There seems to be a logical fallacy in that statement, as if they are jumping to conclusions, which they are. Video games are being accused of increasing disregard for the safety of yourself and others. Those who use drugs and have unprotected sex also allow a general disregard for personal safety. However, note the diagram to the right. A to B, C to B, A to C. See, that is what we like to call in the logic world a proof that does not work. A to B, C to B, A to C is not the way things work. You can't say that a butterfly has wings and Red Bull gives you wings. Therefore, a butterfly drinks Red Bull. I'm sorry, but that's not the way things work. A to B, C to B, A to C does not compute. That's why this argument is nothing but nothing. Although drugs and violent video games may be both found to cause the same disposition, they do not imply that one is a causation of another. And you know what? I completely agree with this. Look, way too many people jump to conclusions when it comes to video games, mostly because they're tired of seeing kids get fat and lazy. Well, here's a bit of a tip for you. Most of the time, when a parent tells a kid to go run along and watch your favorite show, that means I want to go talk on the phone with my friends, and I don't want to be bothered with you for a while. If the parent actually took the time and the decency to notice their kids for more than 5 seconds at a time, then perhaps they would say, hey, you want to go out back and shag some balls? Or, hey, you want to go to the park and rollerblade for a while? Or, hey, I'll take you to the park so that you can rollerblade. If you just give your kid a television and a couch and say, sit down and watch, or if you give your kid an Xbox 360 and say, here's your Xbox 360, I'll see you in 8 hours, well, guess what? They're still going to be sitting at that television. Recently, on an episode of Boston Legal, there was a case involving a child who, quote-unquote, got addicted to video games, where he did not move from the same spot for about 23 hours, and in the process, ended up having a heart attack. Now, that is not the fault of the video game industry. Sure, they're trying to make their games a bit addictive, but you know what? Everybody is trying to make their games addictive. Everybody out there. But still, you have to use discretion, and you have to look in on your kids. If you find your kid in the exact same spot you left them 12 hours ago, guess what? It's time to turn off the TV or unplug it, if you have to, and tell them to go to bed or go outside and go find a girlfriend or something. It's completely wrong and false to correlate one to the other here. It's the fact that this country is so goddamn lazy. That's all. I know that was a bit of a rant, but it just sort of had to be said. Because, again, if your family took the time to sit down and maybe notice you every now and then, that would certainly make things a bit nicer for everybody involved now, wouldn't it? I certainly think so. Anyway, speaking of video games, that's the worst segue I've ever had in my life, by the way. Going from, hey, video games make you lazy. No, they don't. To, hey, how about that PlayStation 3? Well, Travis from Massachusetts gave me news on what could quite possibly be the price point for the PlayStation 3. And here is that news, courtesy of GameSpot.com. Sony exec pegs PS3 at about 500 euros. Vice President of Sony Computer Entertainment Europe says 500 euros, about $615, is expensive for a game console, but cheap for a Blu-ray player. While Sony unveiled a number of its upcoming plans for the PS3 last month at the PlayStation Business Briefing and in its Game Developers Conference keynote address, a few details are still conspicuously unannounced, most notably the price of the machine. It's been an increasingly hot topic of discussion since a February Merrill Lynch report pegged the manufacturing cost of the system at a whopping $900. And now Sony Computer Entertainment Europe Vice President George Fournet has addressed the issue. In an interview with Europe One radio program, Generations Europe, yesterday, Fournet was asked about speculation that the PS3 would be retail for $500. If we take into account Blu-ray, HD video with drives priced at around 1,000 euros and above, the PS3 will be a bargain. So basically what they're telling us is that they decided to go with Blu-ray, and in the process, they gave themselves a really, really expensive player. That's the main difference here. Now, I know that HD DVD is going to be expensive, but it's only going to be about, I guess, as of now, if I remember correctly, each player is probably going to start off at around $300, around the price of where an Xbox 360 is. And the thing is about Blu-ray is that it takes a lot more money to produce. And all I have to do is turn towards the fact that VHS beat Beta. Beta was a better product. Beta was the sort of thing that you wanted to turn to when it came to quality. However, it was also more expensive. And when people are given an opportunity between a system that does pretty much the exact same thing that the other one does, only it's maybe $200 more expensive, that's going to be a problem. The PS3 retailing at about $615, guess what? I'm going to be waiting a very, very long time to buy my PS3. I mean, even now, the Nintendo DS Lite that just came out, a friend of mine just got theirs imported from Japan and paid about $288 for it. Not because it was imported, but because they are so scarce right now, because they underestimated the amount of people who would want a DS Lite, and the price is going for as high as about $320 American right now. That's why if I were to ever buy a DS Lite, I'm going to wait until they start making more. Similarly, there's going to be a way, eventually, that Sony is going to find to make Blu-ray cost less money. As the technology gets more and more perfected, it will become easier and easier to make. And in the process, the price will go down. It happens with every single piece of electronics. Remember when DVD players were about $1,000 a piece? That's because the technology was new. Remember when DVD burners were about $1,000 a piece? That's because the technology was new as well. Similarly, we have the Blu-ray HD. Well, that's new, and it's going to cost money. So for those of you who want to have a PlayStation 3 when it drops, you're going to have to basically go into your savings account and take out as much money as you got. Because, well, hey, $615 is nothing to sneeze about. This better be the best damn gaming system I have ever seen in my life. Because if it's not, and you pay $615 for it, that is going to crush me. And also, so many people forget about this, but the PlayStation 2, while it is a good DVD player, it's not even close to the best. And there are certain DVDs it just will not play. Will we have that same problem with the Blu-ray? Will we find out that the Blu-ray PlayStation 3 plays great PlayStation 3 games, but that the Blu-ray player doesn't work too well? I would hate for that to happen. And Sony better think about that before they even release the PS3. It got pushed back once. I honestly would not be surprised if it gets pushed back for a second time. The Xbox 360 sold for $299 or $399. People are much more willing to pay $300 or $400 than they ever would be for $600. Sony needs to realize this. Sony is going to lose a lot of money here. It would not be the first time, and it certainly will not be the last time, but they are going to lose a lot of money on the PlayStation 3, because in itself, it was pegged at $900 because of its components. Now, if you use components that are that much money, and you charge $615 for it, well, then guess what? You're going to be screwed in the end. I'm sure Sony will find a way to make this money back somehow. Maybe by overcharging their CDs, that wouldn't be the first time. But still, it's a hefty price to pay for next-generation graphics. I think I'd much rather go the route of the Nintendo Revolution, which might only be about $150 or $200, than putting down the money for the PS3. And I am a PlayStation supporter. I've made this clear. Even though I don't like Sony that much, I like the PS3. And actually, when given a choice between Sony and Microsoft, I probably like Sony a bit more. But I love my PS2. I love it. I absolutely adore my PS2. PS3, I'd like to buy. Just not at that price point. I'm a college student, for God's sakes. I'm almost out of college, but it's going to take me a while to get on my feet. You know, it's going to take me a while to get a job out there. And I'm not going to have that amount of money to spend on a gaming system for a long, long time. I hope Sony realizes this, and I hope it gets damn cheap within a matter of maybe 2 years, for their sakes, and for gamers' sakes, and for the sake of developers. Because people putting out games are not going to put out games for a system that's too expensive. It didn't exactly work for the Neo Geo back in the day, and it certainly won't work here. So Sony, you got problems, as always. Deal with them, make your system cheaper, without sacrificing parts, which means it's not going to happen. So great, we're stuck with $615. I hope you guys have a lot of money to spend, because it's going to be a lot. You got to factor in games there too. And also, here's hoping there's about maybe more games in the PSP. That'd be a nice thing too. I'm going to run through two lawsuits here, one of which I talked about on the top of the show as something I was going to mention, and another something that just popped up that was sent to me by David Price. But I'll start things off with the lawsuit that I did indeed mention, and that, of course, is the Blockbuster versus Netflix rival, the Battle in the Bronx. This was brought to my attention both by Travis from Mass and David Price, and I'm going to go with the... Yeah, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe. I'll go with the story by MSNBC, and here we go with that. Online DVD rental service Netflix Incorporated on Tuesday accused Blockbuster Incorporated of illegally copying its ideas in a patent infringement lawsuit challenging the video store chain's recent internet expansion. The complaint, filed in U.S. District Court in San Francisco, focuses largely on the online wish lists that prioritize the DVD desires of about 5.4 million people who subscribe to either Netflix or Blockbuster's internet service. Oh boy. Netflix also believes its patents cover perhaps its most popular feature, the option of renting a DVD for an unlimited time without incurring late fees. That change, introduced by Netflix 7 years ago, became so popular that Blockbuster last year stopped charging late fees for tardy rental returns to its video stores. Dallas-based Blockbuster once pocketed hundreds of millions of dollars annually from those late fees. Both Netflix and Blockbuster's online service charge $17.99 per month to rent up to 3 DVDs at a time. When subscribers return a DVD in the postage paid envelope, the rental services automatically send the next available movie on their wish list. Blockbuster initially denigrated the flat fee concept, but then reversed course and launched its internet service in 2004 after scores of customers defected to Netflix based in Los Gatos, California. Blockbuster has been willfully and deliberately copying Netflix business methods, Netflix spokesman Steve Swayze said. Blockbuster spokesman Randy Hargrove declined to comment Tuesday because the company hadn't yet seen the suit. Netflix contends it's first patented the process of managing DVD wish lists, known as queues, in 2003. Well, that's an interesting story. Mostly because I really don't know which way to turn here. Something as small or as important, it's small and important at the same time, as a DVD queue makes me believe, can you really patent a DVD queue service? Because things like that have been around for a long time. It's a basic wish list. That's what it is. Amazon has one. Nobody's going after Amazon here because, well, it's just a plain old wish list. People have had online wish lists for the longest time. And also, there are a lot of companies out there who have similar queue services where once something comes up in the queue, they'll get sent it. Gamefly works the same way with its gaming. And nobody's going to go after them. This is called Netflix really not liking Blockbuster. And it's so apparent. Sure, Blockbuster bit off their idea entirely. We see that. Okay, I really don't know if you can sue them for this. I think it's just called competition. Competition is something that has been seen for a very long time now as something that is needed in business. I mean, just think of back in the days of the Microsoft suit where they were suing Microsoft for basically owning everything and having a giant monopoly. Well, if Netflix does not allow Blockbuster to compete with them, that becomes a monopoly. For a while there, Blockbuster had a monopoly on the rental services, and Netflix came in and came in with their lovely online service, which I myself would love to have someday if I actually have the amount of money to do so, but we just upgraded our DirecTV, and that's good enough for me because, well, I have a whole bunch of extra movie channels now. But still, Blockbuster has to survive somehow. I know Netflix would love for them to go out of business. That would make life easier. Similarly, I mean, the same could be said for Microsoft back in the day when they wanted Macintosh to go out of business really, really fast. Apple was on the edge for a while there to the point where Microsoft actually saved them and bought a little piece of them in order to keep them running. Microsoft had wanted to drive them out of business for years and years and years, and they almost did it, and yet Apple survived. Well, guess what? Blockbuster is not going anywhere anytime soon. They are going to continue to try and keep up with Netflix. A couple of years back, it wouldn't have been like that. A couple of years back, Blockbuster had an opportunity to buy Netflix and decided not to. Well, now they're getting kicked in the butt for it, with Netflix being a hell of a lot more popular than Blockbuster ever was. Blockbuster is closing stores left and right now. A lot of the stores in the New York area were closed recently because nobody goes there anymore. If people need a movie, they're going to either get it from iTunes or they're going to get it from Netflix or they're going to get it from some other service. Blockbuster doesn't have the name it used to have. Rentals are not what they used to be. I mean, sure, I myself still go to a rental every now and then. I go to Hollywood Video, which is near my house, and I rent something from there, but that's also because I don't have Netflix. If I had Netflix, I would just put it in my queue. The queue is one of the most innovative parts of Netflix, but again, it's something that can't really be stopped from being copied because it's a selection service. It's saying, okay, I want this, 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 and this. Then you put it on the list. Then Netflix tracks it. They send it to you. Then they send you the next one. Then the next one. Then the next one. It's been happening in business for years now. If Netflix is allowed to sue Blockbuster and win damages on this, I really don't know what that's going to say about the rental business. I really think this might very well put Blockbuster on the bottom of the pile, as it were. No pun intended there. Netflix has a chance here. If they get the right judge, they might side with them, but I myself am not siding with Netflix. Even though Netflix is a very customer-friendly service, and I like what they do, I don't think they have a valid point here. Talking about invalid points, here's something that was brought to my attention by David Price. Apple Corporation saw iTunes early and didn't complain. It's the battle of the beasts, Apple versus Apple. The Beatles recording company, Apple Corporation, and this is out of redhardware.co.uk, a British site. The Beatles recording company, Apple Corporation, was giving an opportunity to object to Apple companies' use of the Apple logo in association with the iTunes music store. But it chose not to, the iPod maker's advocate claimed yesterday. Apple Corporation received an ITMS demo in January 2003, 4 months before the service went live. Anthony Grabiner, QC, told the English High Court. Grabiner and Apple Corporation lawyer Jeffrey Voss, QC, made their concluding remarks this week following written and presented testimony from the likes of Apple Corp chief Neil Aspinall and from Eddie Q, head of Apple's iTunes and iPod division. Apple company argues that it uses its logo in conjunction with the service, but not with its content. It says its logo disappears when used by a song. It maintains ITMS hasn't infringed the 1991 agreement drawn up between the two companies to govern use of Apple iconography because the service fits into the definition of what Apple company can do. Apple Corporation, on the other hand, maintains that ITMS is all about selling recorded music, pure and simple, and that this puts the service within Apple Corporation's sphere of operation. Wow, sour grapes all over the place today. Netflix, Blockbuster, Apple Corporation, Apple Company. All right, look, Apple Corporation, I know who you are, all right? You were basically founded by the Beatles. You've been around for years. Good for you. Apple Company, been around for years as well, 30th anniversary. They're a computer company. As a computer company, they went online and they opened up their iTunes music store because it's a music player. If you did not object to this when it was presented to you in 2003 and suddenly, all of a sudden, you're having a change of heart, that is called, wow, they're making a lot of money. I'd love to get some of that. Woohoo! It's at the point where I can't side with Apple Corporation. I can't because, well, Apple is valid here. iTunes has been around for a long time. To put the lawsuit up and running now of all times just proves that you really like money. And you know what gets me most of all about all of this? It's mostly the fact that Nobody ever has a problem with anything until it's a success. Nobody comes out of the woodwork and says, oh my God, that's mine. What are you doing with my things? Oh no. When it happens. No. They do it after it becomes a success. This has happened in gaming. This happened with the PlayStation 2's DualShock controller. Had people not liked the idea of a rumbling controller, you would have never heard anything about this at all. You would have never heard anything at all about Microsoft stealing its ActiveX from another company or using it without its permission or whatever that crazy lawsuit is, because it did well. That's why the lawsuit happened. My show has been covering stories about people either getting screwed by somebody or somebody trying to screw somebody else ever since episode one. And since then, I have almost become disgusted more than ever with the realm of business. Apple Corporation just wants some dough. They could care less what Apple is doing with music, because nobody is going to confuse a recording company with the dudes who make iPods. It's not even close. It's not in their realm whatsoever. But to them, it is. Why? Because right now, iPods are making a lot more money than Apple Corporation makes with their signings. You can get people to record music as much as you want, but when you are the guys putting out the music itself on MP3s for MP3 players, you win. Apple iPods in general are what people want in today's society. And apparently, Apple Corporation wants a piece of the pie. That's all they'll get. They're only going to get a piece. They're not going to get it all. And they're certainly not going to get Apple to stop using the logo with the Apple on it, because that is synonymous with Apple Company now, not Apple Corporation. It's been this way for a very long time now. I don't care if Apple Corporation came first. They said that they could use the logo, and they have. They haven't done anything wrong here. It's just about greed. The Beatles said it was supposed to be all about love. All you need is love. Well, I guess Apple Corporation has moved from love to money, 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 money. Two words strike fear into the hearts of geeks everywhere, because every one of them knows that they're going to fall for something that happens on this day at least once in their lives. April Fools. There were so many April Fools jokes in 2006. There always are. So many of them were really, really good this past April 1st. And Wikipedia has put together a listing of all of those jokes. And obviously, since it is a Wikipedia entry, you can put in as many of them as you want, especially if they're yours. But just to go through some of them here, GameFAQs hosted an image on their site that stated, "You can cheat, but you can't hide." They explained that GameFAQs has been shut down by a group of game programmers. Their reasoning was that people who cheated at video games cheated game developers that had spent hundreds of hours developing it. Visitors who scrolled down to the end of the page got a notice that said that it was just an April Fool's joke and that they would be redirected in 60 seconds. That is awesome. So many times people have seen the "you can trade but you can't hide" or "you can download but you can't hide" messages on BitTorrent sites that have been shut down, and also from a whole bunch of illegal Ragnarok servers, Ragnarok Online servers that were set up for free, usually get notices like that. You can download, but you can't hide. You can cheat, but you can't hide. Well, that's just innovative, and, well, go for you, GameFAQs. Other stuff that happened, well, great things such as iMockery changing the theme and name of their website to iGrounds, claiming that they had been acquired by Newgrounds. A news post on Newgrounds.com was coordinated with this to go along with a joke. Wow. See, that's the thing about April Fools. When you coordinate, you can get anybody fooled. Anybody at all. Insider changed their site design to Ventsider, a source of all things pertaining to vents. In addition, their message forms were altered with a text replacement filter, which switched critical components of the English language like it and for and the in members' posts. Oh, God. Then you've got stuff like Slashdot. Slashdot incorporated a pink Oh My God ponies theme at midnight UTC. This girlish theme is in stark contrast for a techie website believed to be mostly frequented by male nerds. A special birthday report about Jeff Hemos Bates emerged in the first minutes of the day. StarTrek.com claims to have an exclusive preview of a new version of the website, but the link goes to a cheaply made 90s web page about Star Trek, flashing graphics and all. StarWars.com made an announcement on its main page linking to an article explaining that characters from the Willow universe have been inserted into official Star Wars canon. Oh my God, that is just hilarious. SouthParkX.net said their website was bought out by the popular website ToyZ.com, who have also bought out Sweet.com and TheHellhole.com. This is just nuts. Now, the best thing out of all of these, under the unexpected website behavior pranks, Cartoon Network's Adult Swim message board administrators changed the language filter from bleep to funny sayings like gold teeth. However, they took it down within a couple of hours. They renamed several members to Canada and various other countries and cities. And on the same day, Adult Swim pulled something even worse. And, well, oh man, I can't even think about this right now, and yet here I am. Cartoon Network's Adult Swim preempted most of its normal lineup, showing instead an episode each of Karate Commandos and Mr. T animated series, as well as Boo Boo Runs Wild. The night's episodes of Full Metal Alchemist and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex Second Gig ran with, ready for this, near constant fart noises inserted into the audio and closed captioning tracks. Yes, the closed captioning tracks. That is just classy. Adult Swim is known for their pranks. Cartoon Network is known for their pranks. I remember once they had an April Fool's joke where I forget the name of the character, but they kept showing the exact same episode of this one character's show over and over again, all the way through Toonami, back when Toonami was on weekdays, and it freaked out everybody on the sites. They had no idea what was going on, and the next thing everybody knew, they were on the floor laughing hysterically. April Fool's, ha 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 ha. April Fool's kicks butt. That's all I have to say. I didn't do an April Fool's joke because, quite frankly, I'm too good for that. I'm sorry. Really. I mean, to fool my listeners, I don't know. I mean, I really didn't see any reason to pull anything like that, but who knows, maybe next year. Anyway, moving on, we have news out of Newsarama, and here's where the spoilers come in. I am warning you guys, there will be spoilers in what I am about to say. Judge awards Superboy to the Seagulls. Smallville is officially in question. According to Variety, the ongoing Seagull-DC Time Warner battle for Superboy took another step at the end of March when Judge Ronald S.W. Liu, in a summary judgment, found that Smallville may be infringing upon the copyright to Superboy, which are, according to the ruling held by Joanne Siegel and Laura Siegel Larson, the wife and daughter of the late Superman co-creator Jerry Siegel. More importantly, in the summary judgment, which was made March 23rd, Judge Liu found that the Seagulls had successfully recaptured the Superboy rights as of November 17, 2004. Technically, and according to Liu's ruling, the Seagulls have owned the character of Superboy since that time, and following that through would be due a portion of the profits generated by the show since then. Oh, boy. And I go all the way down to this. get ready for the spoilers. For those of you who have not read Infinite Crisis number 6, skip over this portion. I'll give you 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Of course, conspiracy theorists will have a field day with the fact that in DC's recent Infinite Crisis miniseries, a version of Superboy has been revealed to be one of the work's major villains, and that in this week's issue, apparently both Superboys have been killed. Perhaps cleaning the way for one to return using the name Supernova, thus effectively shedding the DC universe of any character named Superboy. Now, Superboy is an icon. Everybody who is everybody who knows comics has heard of Superboy at least once in their lives. Removing Superboy from the DC universe, copping out, basically, and deciding to go with something along the lines of Supernova is just not going to work. All right, they tried this back in the day. Whenever you change a beloved superhero, people will want him back immediately. Electric Blue Superman, anyone? I mean, come on. Superman Red and Superman Blue, anyone? Come on! Especially if you change their name. Hal Jordan was a Spectre for a long time, but nobody really caught on. Why? Because he's a Green Lantern. It's as simple as that. He has always been a Green Lantern. Making him the Spectre just changes the nature of the character. If you're going to change Superboy into Supernova and basically make him a whole new entity, wouldn't it just be better off making a new character? Sure, fans of Superboy are going to want to see this character live. I myself wanted to see him live, but, well, was not in the cards. And 1 year later revealed this even before the issue came out. So we knew it was going to happen, just did not know how. And he did it saving the world, saving the universe. So good for Connor Superboy. And while the evil Superboy is a bit of a different situation. I mean, first of all, he has anti-monitor armor on, which is just interesting. And the fact that, well, hey, if you're having a problem with the Seagulls, why not just make their character evil? Good idea. Look, DC has pulled stuff like this before. They should know better. Hopefully, they did not kill these guys off just to save themselves some money, because they're making a lot of money these days. With the movies and the comics being as popular as they are today, doesn't make any sense to kill somebody off just to save a few bucks. Because if they did do that, I would be very, very upset, and I would basically want my money back on the series. And, well, they don't want to give me my money back now, would they? I certainly hope not. So, well, the Seagulls deserve money. They did sort of create the hero. Is Smallville going to be canceled? I doubt it. It's going to end in its own time. And plus, Superman Returns is damn close to coming out. So do you really want something as convoluted as this associated with the name Super? Superman, Superboy, everything like that? The answer is no. DC, just give in, let them get money from the Superboy name, and keep making Superboy comics. Captain America had a similar controversy for a while, and, well, Marvel didn't go changing his name to Captain Hero or Super America or something like that. No, they just gave in. Whatever. It's stupid to do anything else. Don't change a hero just for the sake of money. Marvel did it as well with Agent X and Soldier X and X-Statix. They didn't want to pay Liefeld anymore. And then what did they do? They changed it back in a matter of months. They were back to being Deadpool, Cable, and X-Force not too long after that. So please, DC, get a clue. You're doing a great job with Infinite Crisis. I liked the issue, and I liked that moment, because it was done really well. But please don't do anything stupid. Please, I've been liking 1 year later so far. I've been liking Infinite Crisis. Don't give me a reason to get pissed off at you, DC. I get pissed off easy. So there's a form of manga out there known as yaoi. And I'll explain it to all you folks out there now, for people who haven't heard of it before. Yaoi is a Japanese manga, or comic as it were, that depicts a relationship between a man and another man. It's basically homoerotica, but it can be tastefully done. A lot of yaoi actually is very, very tasteful, and there's nothing wrong with a comic book that depicts a man and another man. The only thing that I have a problem with is the yaoi that is just straight up porn, because there's really no reason for that other than girls screaming over it. And there is plenty of yaoi that does have story to it. Gravitation, for example. Gravitation is one of my favorite animes to this day, and it was a manga. And it was a very popular manga, and still is. It depicted a love story between a singer and a writer, and they both happened to be male. And eventually, they did come out, and it was a big controversy. And that was the way it went. Yaoi is an interesting genre, because it can be done right, and it can be done wrong. It sort of borders the line in every single aspect. You have to do it tasteful, or else there's no point in reading it. Again, there might be girls out there who actually do enjoy reading two men just pounding each other, and you know what? Good for you. But for me, I need something with a story behind it. And, well, yaoi can have a story behind it. I might be surprising a lot of people out there, but it is very much the case. I'm not putting down the genre in any way. If anything, I'm validating it. It's as good as any other genre of manga. But right now, one of the yaoi companies is in serious trouble. It is in bankruptcy. And it is a problem, because some of the titles that come out of this yaoi house are some of the most popular yaoi titles here in America. And here's the situation, this story coming out of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. We contacted Tokyopop, Be Beautiful, Kitty Media, and Digital Manga Publishing regarding how the Biblos bankruptcy would affect their publishing. Tokyopop informed us that it is currently too early for them to comment on the situation, as they only received word of the bankruptcy earlier today. Stephanie Shevlovsky of Central Park Media stated, "We are sorry to hear the news. They were great people to work with. We're not certain what is going on, but hopefully we're going to be able to work with them in the future. In the meantime, there's no impact in our release schedule and what we're going to be doing." CPM publishes several Biblos titles, including Kizuna, under their Be Beautiful label. So, as a comic book fan and a fan of manga, I certainly feel the pain of people out there who are fans of the manga coming out of this house. Because, American comics-wise, I have seen companies like Speakeasy and companies like CrossGen fall to the wayside. I have seen other companies, smaller companies even, completely lose all of their money. People are putting this stuff out because it's what they believe in. This is their dream, to publish comic books, or in this case, manga. The fact that this company does not have enough money to stay afloat, even though it is some of the most popular yaoi here in America, it says something. It really does. And no, before anybody else says it, it does not say that, oh, nobody cares about yaoi because it's just some gays having sex. No, that is not what it says. What it says is that it's hard for certain genres to survive. When all you have is one niche to your name, that's all you're working with. So even if that is a bestseller, well, what do you do after that? What if one book completely fails? One book failing, just one book, could very well bankrupt a company if there were enough expectations behind said book. And if it's not one book, what if it's two or three or four? These are the dangers with running any company, and especially a comic book or a manga company. Yaoi has its respects. Yaoi has its fans. So I feel their pain, because I've been there before. I hope that the titles that were under this manga company do indeed find a new home. Because, well, if it's good stuff, it'll find a way to go on. All I have to do is think of Abatazad. Abatazad was a cross-gen property that found a new home with Disney after cross-gen went under. Speakeasy. Speakeasy Comics is gone now, but the titles that were once with Speakeasy are trying to find a new home. Just because this is in a genre that's outside of what I usually read doesn't mean I can't empathize with the situation. And I really do. So here's hoping that they do find a way to stay afloat. And if not, well, at least it was a good run while it lasted. Up time here on Geek Speak, where I switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. And, well, it's baseball season. Finally, it is baseball season. Baseball is my sport. Baseball is what I live for. In fact, this upcoming Tuesday, I will be at opening day for the Yankees. Now, I know that there are people out there who aren't Yankee fans, but I'm sure you can relate when I say that they're my favorite team, and I can't wait to be at the ballpark again. Any baseball fan can relate to the aspect of being at the game for the first time in a couple months. And, well, my dad is already preparing the sandwiches. Yeah, he's been planning these out for about 3 weeks because that is how crazy he is. He has the veal cutlets and the chicken cutlets all raring to go as soon as he makes them. They're waiting in the freezer to be thawed out, and he is going to make monster sandwiches, and we're going to blow everybody away. In fact, we have an idea to go to the concession stands and show them, you want a piece? Because we basically paid the same price for this as you're selling the hot dogs for. But still, baseball's back. Now, what do I see out of baseball already? Well, first of all, Barry Bonds is playing, which is, what are you going to do? Number two, Barry Bonds has a reality show. Oh, God. On that first episode of the reality show, he broke out in tears, saying, baseball hates me. I got death threats. I don't want to know. What a crybaby. You know, he's not fooling everybody with this act, okay? A man does not suddenly become a baby. Oh, wait, never mind. It could be the steroids. But still, this guy is tough as nails and always has been. He's trying to get sympathy from us, and it's not going to work. The season has just begun. Barry Bonds needs to understand that we care nothing about his tears at this point. We just want to watch some ball. ESPN is behind this reality show, and for the life of me, I can't understand why. Because, well, it's crap. It's utter crap. Most reality shows are, but this is almost going too far. Because we don't need to see the life of a cheater. We don't need to humanize him. We need to ostracize him. We need to take him as the cheater that he is and make sure that nobody gets away with it ever again. He does not deserve to break any records. That much is a given. If we don't go in there and stop him now, he will disgrace the name of Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth. And people have been talking about it's a race issue with Barry Bonds. No, he's a cheater. He's a lying cheat. It's as simple as that. I could care less if he was breaking the record of Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, or Joe Blow McGough. As long as he is in baseball and he has been cheating to get where he is, I don't want any of it. Barry Bonds does not deserve any praise, and I hope he gets none. Meanwhile, the Yankees are back, and already. They're leaving runners in scoring position. Please don't let this be a long season. Let this be a nice, relaxing season. For me, would that be possible? I don't want to have to sit there and watch the Yankees score 5 runs and then give up 6 again. Because that happened so much last season until they caught on. So, Yankees, please, please, come on. From me, from me. Start scoring when you have runners in scoring position. Please? Thank you very, very much. Signed, Ian. That was the windup. Now here's the pitch every single Monday here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. You can hear me, Ian Levitsine, along with Jason Green, Joey Maggs, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Babe Ruth, and the ghost of Barry Bonds' career, hopefully, on the sporting goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's S-P-E-A-K. GEEK, SPEAK at gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. That's FORUMS. And it is a brand spanking new month over at Podcast Alley. So please, if you can, vote for GeekSpeak on Podcast Alley. There is a link on the front page of GeekSpeak at speakgeekspeak.com. Well, there you have it. Episode 30. 30 episodes of me talking in front of this microphone or the one at my house. Oh my God. I have way too much to say, don't I? Anyway, episode 30 is done. Here's hoping there's at least 30 more. And I am going to go home. So I'm Ian Levitsine. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I will see you on next Thursday for another exciting adventure of Geek Speak. And this will be Geek Speak while I'm on vacation, so chances are I will sound damn good and rested, because vacations are fun. Take care, everybody. Netflix has, and having sex with a condom, well, that's not what it says. The researchers just do $1,000 Europe. $1,000 Europe, that doesn't even exist. But now Sony Computer Entertainment, online DVD rental services. But some of them were really, really good this past year. This past April 1st. It's still 2006. Silly, Ian. Video game cheated. Sounds like a video game in itself. You can cheat for your hand ride. Silly Ian. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.